Hey, this is Joe Takar, and it's been a little over a year since the last episode of That High School Life. If you're a longtime listener, thanks for sticking around. You'll hear this at the start of the show, but just to catch you up on what's been happening while I haven't been making podcasts, I'm a month away from completing my master's, I'm now the DP coordinator at my school, and last but not least, I had a kid. So, a belated welcome to Jen Shishikura Takar. Today's episode looks back and looks forward. My guest for today is Anna. In 2019, she graduated from the Canadian International School in Vietnam, and this year she started her master's degree at Wilfrid Laurier University in Ontario. Teachers often have to look at different measures of success. We do that with test scores, graduation rates, and acceptance ratios. One marker of success for me, though, is seeing the success that my students have as they enter the real world. You'll hear more about it in today's episode, as we look back at high school and forward into the life of a graduate student. You're listening to That High School Life. For those of you who are listening, thanks for tuning in. I know it's been a bit over a year and a half since the last episode, but the reason for that is, one, I had a kid, two, I started a master's, and three, it's just been extremely busy in between all that. So if you're still here listening, thank you. Today I'm talking to a very old student of mine. She's not old aged, but I've known her since 2016. And for me as a teacher, one of the things that's most important is seeing my students succeed. Nothing tells me that I'm doing my job more than seeing my students succeed and also seeing them succeed at their passion. So with that being said, I'm happy today to introduce Anna Doe to That High School Life. Anna, thank you for joining us. I know that you said Tuesdays are your open days, so I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, your old teacher.
Absolutely. It's so nice being invited back, and I'm just so excited to be back on the show.
I know at one point we tried to record an episode 4-5 years ago now, when you just started undergrad, and yeah. I just started working here in Germany. That didn't come out, unfortunately, but this one will. So before I continue, tell the people who are listening about you. Or how do I know you is a better question.
We went way back. So I think you posted the first episode, and that was when I was just still in high school.
Yeah.
So we started there. And then afterwards, I graduated. I went to the University of Ottawa for my undergraduate degree, and I finished April 2023.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And then I am doing more school, and now I'm a master's student at the Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, and the degree that I'm trying to get is a master's of science in health sciences. So quite a change from what I was doing, but yeah.
Tell me about your master's. I do want to hear about how it's been so far, but tell me about your master's. What got you there?
I actually started applying for my grad, like my master's, pretty late. I didn't know what I want, whether or not I want to continue school straight out of undergraduate. So I only applied to two master's programs. One was in applied social psychology at Guelph, and the other one is this one, which is health sciences. I initially got an invitation to visit the campus at Guelph, and I met the supervisor. And to me, that sounded like a soft yes, even though I haven't received the an official acceptance. And then I didn't get the acceptance.
Dangle the carrot.
Yeah. Yep. And dangle the carrot right in front of my face. Didn't give it to me. But in every adversity, there's a silver lining. So 2 months later from that, the supervisor that I was really interested in working at Laurier reached out to me, and he said, at this point, I was waitlisted. There were international, I'm an international student, so that's a whole other issue that we can touch upon. But basically, funding for international students in grad programs are way more demanding. So I was waitlisted for that reason. And I was like, oh, okay, there's no way I'm going to get it. But 2 weeks later, I got the email saying I'm accepted. So that's how I got in a program. And it's the first year it's being offered. So I'm a part of the first ever cohort for this program.
How does it feel to be like my program, communications and information technology at U of T?
That was what I did in undergrad. And when I got into it, the program was just starting to mature. You know, I know what it's like to be part of a program that has just been implemented. And it, you kind of get this feeling that there's like, it's a building process. It's being built as you do the program. Are you feeling that at all as you go through your master's now?
Oh, absolutely. We're essentially, I feel like we're kind of like guinea pigs in a way, where all our assignments, we don't have that many assignments. We only have to do 2 mandatory health science courses because the program is designed to be course light so that can focus the majority of your time on research. For our assignments, there's no rubric. It's very brief instructions, very ambiguous examples that you just have to interpret and make your assignment amazing. So there's that sense where there's less of a structure in expectations, and the professors want us to address them by their first name. Like, it's a very casual environment, despite the fact that we're in graduate school.
You mentioned you were an international student, and coming from Vietnam, the culture there around teachers is that there's this culture of respect around them. Do you find that jarring at all? Like having to address your professors by their first name? It's more collegial for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't even have to say Dr. Blank. It's just the first name. So at first it was a bit weird for me to think that, because I was looking through all their profiles and they've all done these amazing things with all these credentials. So in a way that was a bit of an adjustment, but it helped with my like believing that I'm in the program and that I'm capable. And they really emphasize the fact that since we're also doing research, we're doing the exact same type of work that they're doing. So it's very much of an equal standing kind of attitude.
So you kind of get the sense that they're peers now as opposed to like, well, obviously there's still people to look up to, but there's more of a peer feeling to it. Is that correct?
Yeah, peers with just slightly more experience.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. Decades long, but yeah.
A whole bunch more academic work behind them. Can you tell me, why did you get into this particular field of study? Was there something that said, you know, this is something I'm passionate about, this is something that I enjoy, I can see myself doing it for a really long time? Because undergrad is challenging, but that step into doing a master's degree, this is like where you can actually start having a say in what you do, like much, much more of a say. So for you, what was that process?
So I think for me, by the end of my third year in undergraduate degree, I realized that I wanted to get into clinical psychology, which allows you to be a practicing psychologist in Canada and as well a researcher if you want, and allows you to work in academia. In my fourth year in undergrad, I did an honors thesis, and that's when I realized that I really wanted to pursue research as a career. And getting into a clinical psych program has the competition of that is the equivalent to getting to med school in Canada. So I've heard from many graduate students that having concrete research experience prior to applying to the program would make me more competitive candidate. So that's one of the first reasons why. The second reason is I took on an interest in health psychology when I was doing my undergraduate degree, and interactions between our environmental factors and how that impacts population and individuals' health. So this program has that, in the sense that the faculty members study social determinants of health, and that aligns with what I would like to pursue if I ever become a researcher.
I gotta pause here and say congratulations again, because it already sounds like you've done a lot. But what's crazier to me is that just 7 years ago, I was teaching you an English class when you were in grade 10.
Yes.
Fast forward to now, I'm just wrapping up a master's degree next month, but basically we're at the same academic level. So for you to have made that jump in terms of light speed, I'm so impressed. I know I've said this to you before. For me, proudest moment would be seeing, you know, my old students go from like goofing around in English class to I'm doing some very serious study in a field of research that I found out that I'm passionate about. That's awesome. One day I will be citing your research, I'm sure. I hope I can.
And I would be citing yours.
Yeah. We'll see if we can make those paths cross, and why not? One of the questions I wanted to ask you about, and we were talking about this, not in this podcast, but when we talked a couple of weeks ago, was imposter syndrome. And the reason I'm so curious about imposter syndrome, this is something I wanted to do my research in, but instead I'm looking at something else. Imposter syndrome for educators can be a really big deal. It's debilitating at some points. I'll pause here. It's actually imposter phenomenon. Thank you, Dana, for correcting me. But I will continue with imposter syndrome just for the sake of familiarity. As a grad student, it's really easy to feel that too. You're doing research into something where there might be a really large body of work, and you might be studying something that builds on that body of work but hasn't been looked at before, which can be extremely intimidating. And maybe that's just me. But is this something that you felt in undergrad? Because you did a thesis. I didn't. But for somebody who did that thesis work in their undergraduate years, did you feel that?
Absolutely, I did. And so story about that is I actually prepared way later than I was supposed to. And I was just mass emailing all these professors at UOttawa, hoping that they'll take me in. And at this point, I really didn't care if it didn't align with my interests. I was just like, I just need to have a thesis. Yeah. I just need to get experience. So I ended up doing a thesis on machine learning and its implications on Alzheimer's disease, which is so out of my scope. And I had to teach myself because I had not actually learned this information before about what is machine learning and computer science and coding. And it's like, so that knowledge gap that I had to address definitely contributed to imposter syndrome, or more accurately, imposter phenomenon. I felt like no matter how much literature review I conducted, and at the same time, I was involved in two psychology labs, and they were specialized in sexual health and cyber psychology. And this was the first time that I ever joined a lab as a research assistant, and going into lab meetings and reporting my progress as an undergraduate RA was terrifying. Because all these graduate students just had all these amazing things that they were doing. And even the jargon and the vocabulary that they were using was just so technical and specific that I didn't understand. So yeah, definitely felt like I don't belong here.
Yeah.
So yeah.
The short answer, yes. No, I completely feel you. For most, if not all, the courses I've done, you know, a lot of the times we have to do peer review groups for papers or projects. And some of the people that I've worked with are so smart, and I'm sure you notice this too, that when it came time to peer review, my feedback would be like, you should put your bibliography in alphabetical order. I did that for you. There was one that was out of place. You know? Yeah, it's scary. It's intimidating,
it really
for sure.
It really is.
On that note, there's something to be said for resilience as well, where you come in at the start and by the end, it's like, oh, I actually do know more stuff. Did you notice that as time went on in your undergraduate?
Yes, eventually, towards the end. I think a huge illusion in academia is that everybody is on top of their things and they're experts.
Yeah.
But honestly, if you actually ask them what they're doing, they have no clue.
Yeah.
So speaking to other honors thesis students was really helpful for that.
On that note, you know, you come in and you're feeling a little, I felt dumb coming into my master's. I still feel dumb now, you know, like I think one of the markers of like being in academia is being able to say, I don't know. But there's also something to be said for resilience. And is that something that you found that you developed through your undergraduate? Like, did you come out, you know, you came in saying, oh man, I don't know much. But by the end, did you feel that you'd made progress and that you actually did know stuff?
Yes, I definitely feel that. It was an anxiety-inducing process for sure to gain the resilience and the grit and the perseverance to continue what you're doing, even though you don't know exactly what you're doing half the time. But I presented my thesis at the at the conference that we had. And when people came up to me, I was able to address the questions. And that was a tangible moment where I felt like, okay, I actually do know what I'm talking about, even though I just taught myself this like a couple of months ago. But trust yourself and just be confident that like whatever you're reading and whatever you're consuming, the information, it's being absorbed. Like you know more than you actually feel like you do.
That last little bit that you said resonated with me because I'm working on my final capstone project right now. There are points where I'm like, I am such an idiot. But then it's like, well, I guess I'm not such a big idiot. Maybe I'm a little idiot. But, you know, some of the stuff I've been reading has stuck. And I'm able to connect stuff and synthesize it and be like, these scholars actually advance my, you know, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So you're right. Resilience and persistence, they do play a pretty big role. But I think it's hard to see. You know, it's such a gradual process that it's hard to notice that, oh, I'm actually learning things. Or I'm absorbing.
One of the ways that I use to like ground myself is, well, I have two actually. So I write out weekly reports and actually capture like a diary of what I did the week and what I read and summaries of what I read. So it's physical evidence that I did something, right. And it adds on to your literature review for your research. And the other thing is you have to be kind to yourself in a way that it's like, you've never done this work ever before in your life, like ever. And my mom, what she told me was, Anna, when you went to kindergarten for the first time, did you have a good time? No, you didn't. So going from undergraduate to graduate and even further education, that huge step is like, just remind yourself, you're a kid and you're going to kindergarten for your first time. Yeah. So you're not going to get everything, but you will.
True. Yeah. I think you know this, like going back to, you know, when I taught you in high school, I'm really hard on myself. And yeah, it's really easy to be like, you idiot. But you're absolutely right. It's something you've never done before. I think if I were at the PhD level, maybe I would be warranted in being harder on myself because it's like, well, you did this in graduate school. Why can't you do it now? But you're absolutely right. Yeah, being kind to yourself, it's especially when you're surrounded by so many people who are in that field, who are familiar with that field, or just even practitioners. Yeah. So for me, my master's in educational technology. So to be around people who work with technology or like understand policy so much better than I do, even though I think I have a pretty good grasp of it, it's really hard to not at the end of the day tell myself, you idiot.
It's definitely easier said than done, but also like remind yourself you are in the program and you were chosen to. So what are you contributing to the program that they've chosen you? Because I feel the same way. Like I did my undergraduate in psychology. So going into health sciences, it was definitely way more like biology and cellular mechanisms and like jargon, and I have no idea what they're talking about, but I'm here and I was chosen to be here. And that's just, I have to remind yourself, is that you are worthy of being here.
See, this is where we've come full circle. You are now giving me advice, which is awesome. Again, it's so,
I wouldn't be here today if I didn't meet you in high school.
Oh, so. I'm sure you would have been. You just wouldn't be as witty or I don't know. But it's so nice to hear that. When students come back with that sort of feedback, it's like, ah, okay. But this is what makes my job my passion. So I want to, let's shift gears now. I want to talk to you about what it's like in grad school. So we've talked about your path getting there and the decisions that you made. But practically speaking, what's it like?
There's a lot more freedom in a way that I only have two courses and they all take place on Mondays and I have the rest of the week like free. So it's a lot of it is treating your research as if it's a job. So I find myself having to physically block out hours during the day where I just work on my thesis. Because no one else is going to tell me. That's another thing, is that I do have a supervisor. We meet weekly, but he's not, if I'm off track, he doesn't know. Unless I tell him.
Yeah.
And he also is the graduate, the coordinator for our program. So he has a lot of hats to juggle, and I don't know how he does. So you are your own tracker and you keep yourself accountable. They're just there to guide you with their expertise and their knowledge, but definitely there is no hand holding and it's very independent and self-guided.
In contrast to undergrad, what was that like? And the reason I'm asking you this is because a lot of people who do listen to this podcast tend to be leaving high school or deciding on university and stuff like that. But the undergrad experience for me, and maybe it's true for you too, but the undergrad experience for me was vastly different from what it was to be a grad student. Can you tell me about that contrast?
Yeah, for sure. So an undergraduate, your course schedules are much more consistent. It's not as consistent as high school. Like there might be some days where, and it doesn't start at 8 every day, but you have consistent classes, 4 to 5 classes a week is normal, or sorry, 4 to 5 classes a semester. In undergrad and graduate, there isn't that many classes unless you do course-based mm-hmm. masters, which is a different thing. But if you do research-based programs, not a lot of courses. Your professors and undergraduate degrees tend to be a bit more, I'm not going to say, well, especially in your first year, they're a bit more lenient, and a lot of your midterms is multiple choice and regurgitation of information.
Oh, I missed that.
Whereas, that too. But in graduate studies, a lot of it is no longer that, because they've expected you to already have that information and concepts ingrained, and you are now applying those information.
Contribute to the body of knowledge.
Exactly. Synthesizing it and making implications and filling in the knowledge gaps. So undergraduate gives you the foundation, and graduate studies asks you to take those foundations and build something new out of it.
Contributing to a body of knowledge. Every time I've heard that phrase, it intimidates me. Because again, it's like, I can tell you how to alphabetize a bibliography, and that's really about it.
Like, what? Yeah, like, what is there to address anymore?
I thought we knew everything. No, I mean, as you get further in, what you learn is, hey, you don't know much at all. It's good that you were able to draw that contrast, because a lot of times I get students coming up to me saying, oh, it's not that hard to do undergrad. And it's not that hard to just, like, bridge that gap into graduate school.
Yes, it is.
See, so for those of you listening, it's not just for me telling you that it's hard to make that jump. It's something that comes from another graduate student, somebody that I taught. Having said that, and let's rewind back to when you were at CIS. Did you ever have it in your head, oh my gosh, I'm going to go to grad school right after? Or was that a faraway thought?
I didn't even think about the word research, because I was not a science kid and I hated doing lab reports. And I think in mine at the time, I conceptualized science as natural science. Oh, also, when I went into undergrad, I initially applied for communications. So I was a communication student for the first year of my undergrad. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to do that, get a job and be done with it. But obviously things change, which is another thing that people should really like absorb, because things change a lot in academia. You never know where you're going to go the next day. So, yeah.
Again, great advice.
But yeah, no, it was never a thought, and I didn't even conceptualize universities as research institutions, but they are. So definitely not a thought. I only went to university at the time because everyone else was doing it, and it's something that I felt like I had to do.
Culturally speaking, me coming from Philippines, my parents were like, hey, if you apply to university and you get in, you know you're going, right? It was never a question of, should I go to university? It was a question of, which university am I going to go to? Did you find that coming from Vietnam?
I definitely have the same experience, especially since I was put in an international private school. I already know that my parents expect me to do more school after. So yeah, that has always been an expectation. So I felt like I had to go.
Do you think, looking back, would you have done a gap year if that was an option?
Like with the pandemic happening too?
Let's assume that the pandemic, you know, in this imaginary hypothetical situation did not happen. Would you have done it then?
Yes, I would have done a gap year. I switched my programs, like the combination of my programs, like major, minor, 8 times.
8 times?
In total. Yeah, because I was just so lost, and I'm interested in everything. And so I think a gap year would have helped me gather what I've learned in high school and form more coherent interest. So yes, I definitely recommend a gap year. For sure.
Thinking back to when I was in like high school now, there's two sides to this for sure, because I think that had I done a gap year, I'm the type of person that needs to maintain momentum. And I think I would have planned out a gap year, but I think at the end of that gap year, I've been like, maybe I'll hold back on university, and who knows where I would have been. But you got to know yourself to figure out whether or not a gap year is right for you. But it's a great time to gather your thoughts. And we're running up on time. And by that, I mean my Zoom meeting time is running out.
Yes,
1 minute. So I know it's I'm not rushing you, I promise. But we're coming up to the final 3 minutes and 45 seconds. So I thought this would be a good question to end off on. If you had to go back in time and talk to your grade 12 self. Sorry, I just saw you roll your eyes. But I have to talk to her. If you had to go back and talk to yourself at that time, what advice would you give yourself? And that can be like life or academic, but I'll let you interpret it how you want.
Oh my gosh, my grade 12 self. She was a mess.
Tell me about it.
You knew all about it too. I think my piece of advice for her is everything will be figured out as long as you stay confident and remain calm. You're going to be okay.
Before we end off, I do want to say again, thank you for doing this. I know you've got a lot of things on your plate. It means a lot that you came back to talk to your old high school teacher.
No, thank you for having me. I'm very glad to be invited on your show for the third time now. So,
oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Very honored.
I do hope that I can stay in contact with you so that we can do a follow-up midway through your master's. But like I said at the beginning, where you are now, I'm already amazed by it. And it means so much to me as a teacher to see the success of my students. That's what makes me want to keep being a teacher. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. And as I've said before, I would not be here without you and all the high school teachers that I've encountered in my high school career. So yeah, stay in school because it's going to get you really far. All right. Thank you, Joe. It was nice talking to you.
You've been listening to another episode of That High School Life. If you're a new listener and liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Until next time, thanks for listening, and as always, have a good one.